This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI. Thank you so much for hanging out. That's Jaylen Brown with his sit down with Stephen A. Smith, which I find very fascinating, John, because I think the other story with the Celtics that's going to go on this year, and I don't think it's going to be as elevated as the subject would want it, will be the deep thought and an approach to life of Jaylen Brown, right? Like, it kind of runs counterintuitive or counterculture to what the NBA player is perceived to be, right? A thinking man, kind of a Renaissance man, a guy who's just put out $1 million along with Drew Holiday and Drew Holiday's wife for 10 businesses, $100,000 each for the development of their businesses. So I do wonder how much of Jaylen Brown's message does get picked up as this team, I think, really steamrolls this year.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown's a guy, too. Did you know where he was this morning?
No, probably.
He was at breakfast at Harvard, right? So this is a guy that, you know, last night dominates the Knicks. This morning, breakfast at Harvard, right? I think he's, to me, one of, if not the most interesting players in the NBA. Because not only is he an Eastern Conference Finals MVP, an NBA Finals MVP, but then rather than sign with Nike, creates his own shoe brand. He's doing all this stuff in the community. I thought that interview with Stephen A. Smith was fascinating, really, from start to finish. And I found that really interesting when he talked about the essence. He's like, kids now feel like they have to pick a side, right? Whether it's, you know, Nike, Adidas, Reebok, whatever.
It's been going on for years.
Whereas he just wants people to think about the essence of basketball. And I thought that was a fascinating answer. And I think, you know, there's some people that don't like him, but I think he's the most fascinating player in the NBA. And also, he's a guy that I think has come as long of a way maybe as any player in recent memory. Like, you remember where he was as a rookie? He's coming off the bench, and he's a guy that you're like, oh, he's got these raw athletic skills, but let's see where. And each year, he got a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And then all of a sudden, he's now finals MVP. Like, I think that's a really awesome story, too.
I think it's a great yin-yang situation with Tatum and Brown. I think this is because Tatum is going to get a lot of the accolades and so forth. But I think as some pundits are going to say, well, is it Tatum's team? Is it Brown's team? You'll turn around and everybody here goes, well, it's their team. They've always been together since they pretty much know. It's like one. It's like what they call something twins. I don't want to make it an offensive one. But they're like a year apart. And so these guys have been together through thick and thin. And Jaylen Brown clearly has identified his lane as social awareness, consciousness. And I'm not saying that that's not Tatum at all. But Tatum shows his abilities in other quiet ways. Like, the thing is, you always see Tatum with his kids, where sometimes people have made the whole jokes about the NBA. Do you know what? Well, Tatum, you've seen his kid virtually from the day he was in the league. And so you know who his family is. So both of these guys, one subliminally and one very overtly, are giving you examples of the best of the of who they are and who they represent and the communities they come from, right? So that's you literally have two guys who probably, I would say, the best duo in the NBA since Jordan and Pippen. And trust me when I tell you this, you take Pippen just the same way they made the argument. You take Pippen off of that Bulls team, what would he be? Is like he'd be a first team All NBA guy, just the way he is now.
The Last Dance said that he was a top five player in the NBA in his own right. I mean, I would, in fairness, I'd probably put Kobe and Shaq in that.
But in fairness, Kobe and Shaq was a trade. Even Pippen was a draft night.
Yeah, but they were a duo together that won multiple championships.
But Tatum and Brown are literally two guys who came up in the same crib with the same team.
Yeah.
And this is in an NBA where free agency, where players dictate what they want to do. There were probably at least a dozen, maybe 20 teams banking on one of those two guys not being happy and ready to swoop in with the money to go get them.
Yeah, I might even argue 25 teams. I mean, really. Right. But I think, and we talked about this in the playoffs too, the NBA is unique in that the team can take the identity of someone who is maybe not your best player. And what I mean by that is Tatum and Brown, Tatum and Brown at this point are really a 1 and 1A. Like, Tatum, I think, is a little bit of a better player, but Brown's not far behind. But I think the team, the edge that Jaylen Brown has and the level of intensity, I think other guys like Derek White and Porzingis, and they feed off that just as much, if not more, than they feed off Tatum. But Tatum's still the better player. And I compare it to the Warriors when they had Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was the best player on the team, but that was Steph Curry's team. So I think that's where, like, the NBA is a unique, because a lot of other sports, it's just your best player is the leader and your team follows his identity. The NBA is a little unique that if you have two guys that are close, right, there can't be a huge gap, that are close, you can sometimes have it where one is a little bit better, but the other guy is the one who's maybe more the vocal, emotional leader that guys feed more off. And I think Tatum and Brown, you said yin and yang. I think they've done a terrific job melding those two things together.
Well, I would even go with the Kevin Durant situation. That was someone they had to go get, right? So even their core there in Golden State with Draymond, Steph, and Klay, Klay is not a Jaylen Brown. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you said, who would you, I need another guy. Am I going to take Klay Thompson or am I taking Jaylen Brown? I'm taking Jaylen Brown because there's so many things he can do. But I think what's really key in this scenario is, and as you mentioned a little bit as well, is players have to look at Jaylen Brown and say, you know what? If he was any other type of guy, kicking and screaming, get me out of here, I could be a star on any other team in this league. I would be the first guy. But because the way Jaylen Brown carries himself and is confident in himself, and this goes back to his raising and his childhood, that he knows who he is, and that's so key because a lot of these young guys get dictated of who they're going to be by the money, by the attention, by the fame. You see what I'm saying? Like,
no, I
some
agree,
guys are
100%.
Fighting to get shoe deals. And Jaylen Brown's like, okay, well, you're not going to force me into those. I'll just go ahead and design my own over here.
And I think... So the best thing that happened to the Celtics this year was that they won the championship, right? Duh. But I think the second best thing is that it was Brown who was Finals MVP.
Yes.
Because he got snubbed from all NBA. He got snubbed from all defensive. Tatum's the one in the commercials. Tatum's the one first team all NBA 3 years in a row. But now it's Brown that's the Finals MVP, that's the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. You could even go back to 08, right? Kevin Garnett was the best player on the Celtics, but it was Paul Pierce, the heart and soul of the team, that won the Finals MVP, right? And it was his team. And I think, again, if Tatum had won Finals MVP, it still would have been a great thing. But I think it really showed the rest of the NBA that, hey, these guys can coexist. Here's the balance among these two guys. You know, one's first team all NBA and could win a Finals MVP and could win a league MVP, but the other guy is just as capable. And I think that was also great for the two of them, for the team, that it wasn't just all Tatum. It was Tatum, but Brown's the one with the Finals MVP.
I think what happened was pitchers were put to the words of us here in New England about how we described whose team it was. We'd always say it's their team, right? We never said it's his team or it's his team or he's, it's their team because they have been the ones that have been together through all of this. Even when the Kemba Walkers didn't work out or the Gordon Haywards didn't work out or Kyrie didn't work out, they were still there. So this is their team and that's unheard of in the modern day NBA. 617-779-7937. Let's continue the Celtics conversation because you wonder, can they go undefeated going into the Golden State game November 6th. We'll look what's coming ahead, but right now it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All righty, let's get you caught up on what's trending. One last time for the night, Celtics raised banner 18 to the rafters and kicked off their pursuit of banner 19 with a statement 132-109 win over the Knicks. Jason Tatum led the way for the Seas with 37 points, 10 rebounds. Jaylen Brown and Derek White were right behind him with 23 and 24 points, respectively. They'll have the night off before heading down to the nation's capital to take on the Wizards tomorrow night, tip-off set for 7. Bruins fell to the Predators 4-0 in Nashville last night, wrapping up a 3-game road trip that saw the Bees go 1-1-1. They also have the night off before welcoming the Dallas Stars to the Garden tomorrow, puck drop set for 7. Patriots injury report came out today ahead of their matchup with the Jets at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. We mentioned it earlier, but running back Ramondre Stevenson did not participate with a foot injury slash not injury related personal reasons. Also absent at practice were rookie wide receiver Jalen Polk, who was in the concussion protocol, and tackle Viridian Lowe, who missed last week's game with an ankle injury. In other NFL news, the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs acquired wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins from the Tennessee Titans in exchange for a conditional fourth round pick that could become a third. In MLB news, Netflix released their 2004 Red Sox documentary entitled The Comeback, which releases on the 20th anniversary of Game 1 of that 2004 World Series. And sadly, Dodgers legend Fernando Valenzuela has passed away. He was just 63 years old. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More KJ and Lions coming up after this.
This is KJ and Lions on WEEI.
KJ and Lions on WEEI. Thank you so much for hanging out on Wednesday night. That's Joe Mazzulla saying something that's spot on, John, is the championship season is now officially over. It ended when that banner stopped going up to the rafters. Once it stopped, that's the end of it. It's a completely new season. I don't think this is a team that you have to worry about losing its mojo, but I think there are going to be times where there are going to be challenges. And I think the fan base has got to realize that, like, last year and this year are two different years.
Do you remember, KJ, from last year what my favorite quote was?
Celtics quote. I don't have an OnlyFans page. No, totally kidding. Which one was it?
No, it was when Tatum said, and I think this was in February, maybe early March, post-game press conference, he said, you know, the prior year they had been so obsessed with just getting back to the finals, they tried to fast forward through everything,
yes.
And they ended up costing them. And he said, this year we're trying to say no skip steps. And they didn't want to skip any steps. They want to take everything one step at a time, one day at a time. And it ended up, again, process was great, ended up in a championship. And it feels like they have a similar vibe now. I even heard somebody mention no skip steps. I forget if it was Tatum or Brown prior to this season. It feels like all summer they worked on whatever, you know, their game. They worked together as a team in training camp and preseason, going to Abu Dhabi, coming back. They came out strong against the Knicks. It feels like they're in the right mindset of they're going to continue, as Mazzulla said, that process where they're not just going to try to fast forward to the finals again. They're going to do what they did last year and try to take everything each step as it comes.
Look, there's kind of a test here, their next two games, right? Because you're playing at Washington, at Detroit.
Yep.
And you're probably feeling like, oh, man, Celtics by a million. But these are those small tests early on, because Washington's going to do – like, if Washington makes this game competitive, it could be the difference of selling more in-season ticket packages, or it's the same old thing. In Detroit, if they win that game Saturday night, or if it's a nail-biter, they can sell to their fans that this – our team is growing because they took the world champions – to the limit. So this is where I understand where Mazzulla is coming from. The process hasn't changed. It's just that the dates have. And so as long as you continue to hold on to the process and understand what's at stake, like, what was so good about last night's win was, and I still think the Knicks will have to figure some things out, but what I think it did was put a mirror up to the Knicks and how they operate through Thibodeau. Like, what the Knicks were shown last night was, man, the best thing this team could probably do is put on boxing gloves against the Celtics, because that's your only chance. You cannot hang with what this team offers despite what you think you do or what your system is. And the Celtics showed that this isn't something that's just going to happen on one night or we got hot tonight. Bro, this is the continuation of the last album. So Mazzulla is that right guy, because he's, what, only 10 years older than Jalen Brown?
Not even, I think.
Not even? Yeah. I mean, well,
I think
Brown
he's
has 36 a birthday.
36 and Brown's 28.
Yeah, something like that. So he's not even 10 years older than his star players. So there's this thing that can develop, and you see it happening, where you've got two superstars that still have probably a good 8 years of their career ahead of them. 8 solid years ahead of them. And a coach who probably has a solid 15 to 20. Maybe 25 ahead of him. In 25 years, he'd be 63. Their coaches, what, how old is Popovich? Close to 70?
I think he's over 70.
He's right. So Mazzulla could end up being, and this is what I think he probably understands for his, because if he's coaching his guys to be these kind of Zen masters, he knows that he has an opportunity to be an NBA Zen master now because of his age, because of his ability to manage superstars, but if he can help develop role players, I think that's kind of his next step to greatness. He can be anything he wants in this NBA under being the commissioner because of how he's handling these superstars now. And so what he's letting this team know, hey, just continue to keep your foot on the gas. Don't even think about what happened last year. Those games are gone. But take that same approach now as I will do in this journey with you. Not like, hey, because think about it. Joe Mazzulla is that type of guy that he would never want to coach for another team. Like, he could be the modern day Red Auerbach for this team because he's coming in young. The way he came up, you see what I'm saying?
From, like, Rhode Island.
From Rhode Island, right? Like, the last get, like, the guy four seats down, like, you get in here and coach. Like, okay, I'm ready. And now seizing the moment. So this all starts with the leader. Like, everything that we went through seeing with Belichick and Brady through all the dynasty years and so forth, I think we're on the cusp of starting to see that in the NBA. And even though the NBA is different, I would say six NFL championships in the NBA would be the equivalent of probably winning four of them. So only because, again, the way free agency works is a bit different in football. You don't just get up and move. You know, the draft works differently and so forth. But I think with this team, as long as I think the only thing that can get in their way is health, and the coach isn't even on the complacency trip. So as long as that energy remains, I don't know how this team even mentally gets touched. It's one thing to lose a game, but to mentally beat this team, I just don't see how it happens.
Yeah, the only, like, long-term concerns I have, like, 3-4 years from now is health and also who the new owner is, right? And if they're willing to pay some of these contracts, they'll pay Tatum and Brown, but beyond that. But as far as this year goes and what you're talking about in Mazzulla long-term, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this is a guy that there was a lot of questions about him after the Celtics lost to Miami a couple of years ago. And remember, they brought in Sam Cassell. They brought in Jeff Van Gundy. Some people whispered those guys were Mazzulla insurance in case
break class emergency.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And instead, what did he do? He leaned on those guys, worked with those guys. He grew as a coach. The team grew together. And now, take everything you just said, KJ, and add in the fact that now he's a championship-winning coach. So now he's got that stature and cachet behind him, and he's won a championship with these guys. So he can look around the locker room and say, hey, the stuff that we did together won a championship, so if we do it again, we'll win again. Right? It's not like a coach came in from somewhere else, hey, this is what I did in Indiana.
This is my system,
and it worked there, and tried it. No, it's like, we did this together, and we won. So if we do it together again, theoretically, we can win again. And I think it's really important, especially in the NBA, with an 82-game season, that you're process-oriented. Because like you said, there's going to be off-shooting nights, right? There's going to be nights here and there you don't play well. Maybe you're going to have a random night in Charlotte or Atlanta or, you know, Golden, where you just don't play well. But if you're in with the process, that's how you come out looking like you did the other night. Because you said something earlier in the segment, which I think was really interesting and correct, in that last night was more of a continuation of what they did last year than it was the start of something. I mean, you look at, they won game five against Dallas by 18 points and they were dominant. Well, they won last night by 23 and they were dominant. And they, like, it was almost they were dominant defensively, dominant offensively, felt like they were a step ahead of the opponent. They were tougher than the opponent. All those things we said about them and the Mavs, we saw once again last night. I think that, to me, like, if you look at NBA teams that have won back-to-back championships, whether it was the Warriors teams, the Heat teams, the Lakers teams, it felt like it wasn't two separate seasons. It was kind of one run together of multiple champs. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it was
right. It's not a second part,
like,
of the movie.
The 17-18 Warriors felt like one team that won two championships.
Right, and people still believe that that's still the same team in some, just because perceptively of just having that continual run. But I've said this, and I know it's like, okay, KJ, you're picking a thorn out of a beautiful rose assortment. But if you've got teams like the Wizards and the Pistons and two games with the Hornets back-to-back and then the Hawks, this is going to be very key for some of these role players to really take advantage now, because you're seeing these teams now. Because if you're seeing them this early later on, you're going to be seeing the better teams later. You could clearly see that the team is back-ended on the schedule. Now, can they be undefeated by time they get to the Warriors? I think there's a chance that they could. At Wizards, then at the Pistons, and they've got the Bucks here next Monday night, and at Indiana, which I think they'll be so overhyped to get it done that we'll be on the air. It'd be interesting to watch what happens, because it's funny. Here we're watching the Knicks game as we're on the air last night, and then next week we'll be on the air watching, keeping an eye on this Indiana game, and it almost feels like you may see the same result that you saw last night, where they're so hyped. This is who they want to come get. I don't know if you saw the video, even when the Knicks were on their way to Boston and Kat's handing out all these game systems and everything. It's like, maybe you need to hand out some outside shooting. But again, does the foot stomp come on some of these teams that are being named? We've named the Knicks. We've named the Pacers. We've named the Bucks. You'll see three of those, the three teams that you say Philly, and we don't know when we'll see them, or with Joel Embiid, that might even be a special engagement. But you'll see the Knicks, the Bucks, and the Pacers all within your first five games. That's so key. If they can mud stomp those teams in that first, it sends a clear message. I mean, a message to the point where they may have to start thinking about what they're doing at the trade deadline or even before, because they know what's in front of them. You can't beat that.
And I think if they beat down Washington and Detroit in the middle of that too,
right,
that will really show it too. Because let's not forget, remember that Jaylen Brown quote about, yeah, we'll play Detroit, a team that struggled, and Hauser or Pritchard will go for 30 and we'll still win? Like, you don't think Detroit heard that and they're like, oh yeah, but we're going to come after you? Like, if you still go to Detroit and you blow them out and then you beat Milwaukee and Indiana, that'll show that kind of no-skip-steps mantra that they're continuing on with.
But you know what that other side of that coin of that comment is? Hauser and Pritchard, here's your time to shine.
Yep, like, I agree.
This is like, because if we're the ones carrying the wagon, we're the stars of this team. We also realize that you guys can be stars in your own right inside of this team construct, right? We want to be able to celebrate your victories in certain situations, because you going off, say, and may be able to get 25 minutes in a game because you're consistently contributing, is going to be the additional rest that these guys are going to need as the season starts coming into its crunch time towards the end. Again, it's not going to be like a couple of years ago. You remember where it was like, if so-and-so and so-and-so loses, then the Celtics would be the second seed. If so-and-so and so-and-so loses, Celtics would be the first seed. I think last year they're like, you know, enough of that. We'll just run away with it. And we'll know that we're the number one seed probably by, I don't know, the beginning of May. So that's the other part, is how do we get to a point where these role players take advantage of these games against the Wizards, against the Pistons, the back-to-backs against the Hornets? What can you do in the Atlanta game? Because that Golden State game, Tatum and Brown is probably like, don't you take me out there.
You're going to play 48 minutes. Yeah.
I'll play 49 if I got to.
Yeah, and then only a few days later, they play Milwaukee again in Milwaukee. So I think there's – and even Cleveland in mid-November, like, that's a game to keep an eye on as well, because that's a team that it took you to five games, which, again, it's only five games, but Donovan Mitchell missed the latter portion of that series. That's a team that you most likely, I think, will see in the postseason. So how do you handle that? I mean, it's – and then Minnesota, November 24th. Like, that first month of the season, because today's the 23rd of October, some interesting tests for the Celtics off the bat to see if they can make that statement. Whereas, like we said, last night felt like a continuation of last season, not necessarily the start of a new thing. Can they keep that going, and can they play these teams just like they played the Knicks last night?
All right, Wizards tip off tomorrow, 7 p.m., and we'll be able to. You know what?
Watch that one.
Yeah, what's the Thursday night football game? Because that might be something.
Rams Vikings.
Oh, well, the Celtics got all my attention. That's great, because now I don't have to worry about flipping into a service, you know, out of the Prime service. And then it's like, I even started watching it on my Xbox.
How annoying is that?
Yeah, I started watching it on my Xbox on Prime, just so that way I could at least be inside of the app, you know, like the app situation, where I can then go over to the cable app and then watch the game from there. So I think it'll be a fun game to watch. I look forward to the role players being able to contribute. All right, the World Series starts Friday. And if I'm a Red Sox executive, I'm probably watching and going, because here's the thing. Like, we talk about this in football, like in terms of coaching. Well, in baseball, you wonder, like, okay, how can it work out for him with the Dodgers? And he's got the same stuff. that, and it not work out for the Red Sox. The mound's not lower. You know, maybe weather, I guess. But it really is a culture thing. I think Alex Cora is the right guy. But do you, if you're the Red Sox and you're looking at the World Series, do you say to yourself, okay, enough is enough of this kind of like, how do we find these gems at Goodwill and try and piece things together? Because here's what I think in what's happening in Major League Baseball. The superstar player is becoming even more and more rare. Like, can you really, like Mike Trout, can you really still put him in that category with all these injuries?
No.
Right? It feels like it's Shohei. Even Mookie Betts at this point, you're like, okay.
I know, Mookie's a superstar.
He's still a superstar, but you would have to overpay for what the length of what it's going to be. Now, you wouldn't have to overpay at all. You just still can continue paying what you were paying before. But it does seem like virtually all of the superstars in baseball are with the Dodgers. You've got a couple with the Phillies.
Yeah. Padres.
Padres.
And Yankees.
And Yankees. And what did they all do?
Deep in the playoffs.
What did they all do?
Spend money.
They all spent money. So if you want to still be the beloved Boston Red Sox, you have to say, you know, what is money in exchange for? Now, here's the other side. I'm going to put the business hat on, which people hate, aside from hating me, is, and we've talked about this, if these baseball games are being shown on FS1 and TBS, then the TV contract isn't as rich. So in one sense, you would say, hey, the Red Sox can kind of help the situation of Major League Baseball by adding another major market television team to be relevant. Because remember when the Yankees and Red Sox played that early series, it had some very high numbers when it was on network. So people were still willing to watch a Yankees-Red Sox game in season, give it great numbers. Now, when you start getting into the Padres, like, it's really great that the Padres spend money, but it's no different than showing the Colorado Rockies on television in terms of population for those two television markets. So you need the Red Sox to be in that mix so to get another major television market. It kind of now hurts when Houston isn't there because of the size of that TV market.
Chicago's not there either.
Chicago's not there. So when you have to start thinking about the Padres in there, you're happy. Like, they couldn't be happier with the Dodgers Red Sox. Like, Major League Baseball is over the moon with the Dodgers Red Sox. With the Dodgers, yeah, and maybe my accidental speaking will speak it into existence. With the Dodgers Yankees World Series. And I think even these stories you really can't make up or how they connect. But this one now becomes even more special because the last time the Dodgers and the Yankees played each other in the World Series, Fernando Valenzuela, who just passed away yesterday, was the breakout star of that 81 team. So now you have a story to go along with this series that's become new, and you can kind of relive some of the old. The Red Sox don't want to miss out on that, and I think there's only maybe like a 2 or 3 year window before it goes kapoof.
Yeah, look, I think the Red Sox just have to ask themselves a question is, do they want to win? Because if they want to win, the formula is staring them in the face. I mean, what the Dodgers and the Yankees are is exactly what the Red Sox could and should be. And I know that maybe those teams can spend a little bit more than the Red Sox. I acknowledge that. But think about how they've built their teams. They have homegrown prospects that have become stars. They have other prospects they use to trade for stars. And they had major free agent signings. It was a nice mix of all three. Look at both rosters, right? They both have guys that fit all three of those criteria. Whereas the Red Sox, they don't have any major free agent signings, don't have anyone on their roster that's really of a significant trade addition. I mean, if you want to include Willy Abreu, fine. They just have those homegrown guys. So if they want to win and they want to be on the level of those two teams, the formula is staring them right there in the face. It's what they did in 2018, and they won a World Series. So it really comes down to, KJ, they have to ask themselves the question, do they want to win at a high level? And if they do, the formula is right there for them. If they don't, we'll continue to see what they've been.
Well, here's the tough part about that, and this is also the business part, but I will be for the fan, it seems like. You know, it seems like I'm anti-fan, but I'm not, is you can't have the person in front of the people who signed the check saying, oh, we can build, we can build, we can build. No, you need to have someone in front of you who says, we need to mix and match as you've done before. Now, the question, I think, is, you're right, do they want to win? But it also is, do they want to spend? And look, if you look at the Angels, that's kind of a situation where it's like kind of a disaster where spending went completely wrong. Like, can you even like those guys have disappeared?
They're an embarrassment. Like, that's, if you're not spending because you're worried about that, that's pathetic.
Well, but that's what they probably think about, because those are two guys that deservedly so at that point deserve to get the money that they got and did not perform. Trout has performed quite a bit.
Put nothing around those guys.
They weren't growing anything. That's the other part.
They didn't have it. Yeah, right. They didn't.
And
grow
he had
anything,
an owner who's actively wanting to sell. He's wanting to sell. So that does factor into like what's really going on here. But this is not a situation where the Red Sox are for sale or anybody's talking about putting it up on the market. So that's not the case. You clearly see that the Yankees are in a situation where, hey, we've seen the Yankees spend more, and they haven't done that, right? Like, right now, Juan Soto is really just a one-year rental for them.
And it's an interesting point, because if you look at the Yankees' three best players, right, Aaron Judge is homegrown, Gerrit Cole's a free agent signing, and Juan Soto is a guy you just mentioned they traded for.
Right.
You have to use all three avenues if you're going to be a championship team.
And I think also why people got scared with the Giancarlo Stanton contract, it looks very valuable now. Like, this is the whole thing about 10 years. Let the 10 years pass and see where things are. Because now you've got Giancarlo Stanton making himself available a little more often than when he was going through like the path of injuries the last few years before. And now coming up clutch in big games in the playoffs, which was kind of the knock when he was during those injured times. Like, what are we paying him all this money for? They said it was going to be the contract that set off all these bad things. But now when you think about it, what does Ohtani get, 50 a year? Let's just call it what it is on the
60
books.
60 a year.
60 a year, right? Giancarlo Stanton is, what, 26 a year? So yeah. And we're closer to that 10-year mark.
The Mookie contract, too. Like, in 6 years, if he's still good, that's going to look like relatively affordable for a guy.
Right.
So that's the thing I think a lot of people don't always think about either.
Well, that's what I think may be the hang-up for the Red Sox. You're thinking more so about how much is going to cost you in the first 3 years than think about how the overall value of the contract, because Mookie's been gone now, what, four years?
Yeah, spring of 2020, yeah.
Right, so 4 years. Can we say that whatever money he's gotten has already paid that contract off?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly what you mean. Like,
in terms of like the 4 years that Mookie, the 4 years since he's been gone, do you believe that the Dodgers have gotten their money's worth?
Oh, yeah. They won a World Series. They're in the second one. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't understand what you're saying. Yeah.
At 9:43, I'll give you a pass. The show's four hours.
Yeah. They're in their second World Series. They've already won a championship. He's one of the most marketable stars in the league. Yeah. I think they've gotten their money's worth.
So why couldn't the Red Sox gotten their money's worth?
Yeah.
I think it's because
we could spend 4 hours on that.
Well, I don't think we could put it on a time card, but that's my point. I think they were more concerned, and some fans have to raise their hand and say, I didn't think he was worth the money, and you got caught up in how much money he was going to make. Keep in mind, this is a guy who loved it here, was starting his family here, so it wasn't like a guy was like, I'll just take the offer.
Had won an MVP here, won a World Series.
Right. Even with the construct now of Devers, who, you know, let's just call it what it is, I am going to be a bit concerned about how these injuries might start taking its toll on him in terms of him being really the only bat that scares other pitching around the league. Other guys you're still trying to figure out, Cass is the whole nine. I don't get deep into that argument. But if Mookie is still here, you'd probably say that's less stress on Devers and you may be getting more out of him. He may be on that superstar level with a Soto, Judge, maybe right below Judge, in terms of like, hey, you could have that argument because he has protection in the lineup. And there's probably another superstar player that was willing to come here to be part of Mookie's team. Why? Because that's what happened in L.A.
Oh, yeah. We've seen it happen 4 years in a row now.
Right.
Yeah.
Mookie's there. Let's go get Freeman. Freeman comes
now
in.
Now Ohtani's there. Everyone's going to want to go. Like, that's when it becomes almost a self-fulfilling machine.
So let's just imagine if you had Mookie, Freeman, Devers, just as part of your core.
Or even if it was still just Mookie, Devers, and Bogarts. Like, you'd be so much better than you were.
I can see how Bogarts may have been gone, but because they were in the case of, like, what type of money he takes.
What I'm getting at is if they were willing to pay Mookie, they would have paid Bogarts a year early and headed off at the pass.
It's a
different mentality organizationally.
Right, but that's the thing. Look where the mentality has them now. So you've had a guy who's here for the last 4 years that says, hey, I can find some great suits at Goodwill and they're steamed clean new, to now having control of the new guy who's in here, who kind of has that song and dance, but is like, hey, let's go find the young talents and prospects at the double A. Maybe there's a pitcher we can identify down there that we can get in through some maneuvering and stuff like that. That's really cool if you're Pittsburgh, but this is Boston. This is the highest ticket per state for cost at of all stadiums. It's the highest ticket, but you're not getting the return. And I think at some point the fan base is really, really going to lose it. Another 81-81 season. How does that fly next year?
Yeah, I think they're on the clock this offseason. Because think about it, too. There's a growing level of apathy with them. And now that the Celtics have won a title and are potentially going to win another one, and let's say the Bruins go deep in the playoffs, all of a sudden, you know, you're getting into June where people are focused on something else. And even with the Patriots sucking, it's still the NFL, so it's going to be a big story. So they're going to just increasingly have more and more apathy. And this offseason has some opportunities for them to make some splashes.
Yeah,
so I think they're on the clock this offseason.
Yeah, I think the worst-case scenario is the Bruins kind of stink it up. But because the Celtics will be relatively good, I think the Yanks will really go to the Red Sox because that's everybody's summer. Like, if the Celtics win, like, it's like we're going to start replaying 2 years of games over and over and over again. It's like, let's talk about game 86 from 2 years ago, because that was, you know, that was absolutely great in the first season in the playoffs. So, you're absolutely right. The Red Sox are on the clock, and they have to be serious about it. And it doesn't, I mean, my goodness, Ryan Brazier has been like the, what do we call it, the spot starter through the playoffs for the Dodgers, and yet he was here.
And the most ridiculous thing about
the most ridiculous thing about Brazier is that the only change the Dodgers made when the Red Sox DFA'd him was they told him to start throwing a cutter, and it worked. Like, why couldn't the Red Sox have figured that out?
Right. Why couldn't Cutter show him how to throw a cutter? like something. But again, I think you can no longer be asleep at the wheel. Like, it's easier when you say that when the Dodgers don't make it, you're like, well, look at all that money they spent. Look where it got them. Now you say, hey, look at the two teams in the World Series and look at all that money spent and look where it got them.
Add in the Mets and the NLCS. They spent a ton of money.
And they're ready to spend more money next year. So that's absolutely crazy.
The Padres went to Game 5 against the Dodgers. They spent a ton of money.
I wonder if they're going to have to start peeling off a little bit.
I hope not. I love that team.
It's so much fun to watch. Yeah. But I'm sure there are teams that are really ready to say, hey, we give up some money for some of those guys. You start needing some prospects. I think that might be the case. KJ and Lyons, we wrap up the show next here on WEEI. Thanks for hanging out.
This is not a real election ad.
KJ and Lyons bring forth a new nation in sports talk entertainment. A show that believes in appealing to the super smart down to the guy who still acts like a 10th grader.
I'm letting you know that I'm a damn werewolf.
The show that can tie everyday life and Boston sports like no other.
It's high-end stuff, KJ.
This election season, vote KJ and Lyons, a show for the people, by the people.
Yes, KJ and Lyons can.
KJ and Lyons are doing a heck of a job.
And yes, KJ and Lyons are bigly on sports.
Read my lips.
KJ and Lyons are the bee's knees.
Because it is you that KJ and Lyons work for.
I could care less about some kid in college right now.
You better care about him, KJ.
No, here's the thing.
Vote KJ and Lyons, a show for you, the people.
I'm KJ, and I overdraft my account to pay for this ad.
This is not a real election ad.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons to an end. John, if there's one thing that you came away with tonight, talking Celtics, talking Patriots, Bruins, what's the one thing that sticks to your gut?
The one thing that sticks is the Celtics' start last night was not the beginning. It was a continuation of what they did last year, and I think that's a great sign.
Bro, you've got the green captain. Green team draws on. You and Turpin. Thank you, Justin, so much for joining us early. Missed any of the show? The Odyssey app is free. Just type in WEEI. Go to WEEI at night. I think if there's one thing I take away from tonight, John, is Ramondre Stevenson really on his way out of here potentially?
Yeah, it's a question to think about.
Yeah. So we'll be back here again next Tuesday. So until then, enjoy. Thank you so much for hanging out with KJ and Lyons. Have a wonderful week. We've got a Boston College Friday night here. So definitely continue to hang out with WEEI, Greg Hill Show, starting at 5:20 tomorrow morning here on WEEI. Have a good one. I don't have an OnlyFans page.